a lot of the times when people progress in like lower rank guilds, and a lot of the times people focus on the wrong things, DPS especially. In Race to World First progress, DPS is like the last thing that you think about.
What's kind of your secret to passing so well? And
what a lot of people don't know about tanks nowadays is like a thing I also researched back then, is a thing called parry haste. But yeah, figuring that stuff out, pretty integral to min-maxing the damage. I actually made the whole raid move on pull somewhere and made the Shaman at Blasted move even further, because back then Bloodlust had a range of 100 yards. And then I got my own personal Bloodlust.
Just to get that pass is amazing.
Back then, I didn't have a good PC, so my FPS dropped from like 60 FPS to like 15.
Wait, so you were doing 15 FPS and you were still passing well?
A recent example of that would be the Jailer, where I was analyzing movement patterns that we did. The whole melee camp is just going there and losing like 5 seconds of uptime. And I was like, okay, guys, if you go here, bait there, and then move here, you have full uptime.
Like, what is the Race to World First back then like?
It was very secretive. A lot of the guilds do something. They also spy on each other for this, or try to at least. There was like this hidden rule that basically all guilds adhere to. I wrote a Vigora back then, because this was back then in the days. There was no kill videos. There was no streams. I was completely new at Vigoras, kind of. And
does that mean that the top guilds back then, they all had some Vigoras master?
Yeah, that's when it kind of started, and when it started to become crazy.
Your fondest memory in World of Warcraft?
I will never forget the first one. And we were killing Helya, because we were competing. It was a three-way race. At the time, it was Exodus, the Russian guild, and then there was Serenity. Like, most of the people that were previously in Method, I think it was Just Wait, Perfecto, Roger Brown, and Sko,
right,
they joined up with us, with Rapid Eye Movement. Yeah, us then winning that race was, it felt really, really good.
What's the reason why you created the MDT add-on?
It's the same reason I create anything, pretty much. It's because I'm a lazy person.
Very special guest today on the podcast. You have Noggy. I think a lot of you folks probably know him from, you know, the famous MDT add-on that we all use, that's been carrying our asses and keys, as well as, you know, you're probably one of the most famous DKs in the world. So before we start, Noggy, why don't I turn it over to you? Why don't you do a formal introduction of yourself?
Thank you, Kwasi, for having me on the show. And yeah, as you said, I'm Noggy. I'm known for making MDT. Also being part of the Race World First squad in both Method and Echo for many, many years. And yeah, over the years, I've been part of many of those Race World First wins, actually, and I've acquired a lot of knowledge, and I've also made a lot of different Vigoras, and yeah, become kind of also a programmer now. So I'm doing a lot of things well, and I'm loving it.
Awesome. And there's already a lot to go into from just your introduction, but let's kind of, you know, start step by step. Before we talk about all the Race to World First experience you have under your belt, and, you know, there's a lot of great stories there. Let's start with just being one of the most famous DKs in the world. You have been playing DKs for the longest time. What drives your dedication to just playing one class? Kind of talk about that.
Yeah, there's actually like maybe a little bit of a misconception, maybe. Like, I don't just like to play DK just because it's DK, and I don't really have like a very big, let's say, attachment to the class, let's say. It more stems so from the way we did things in Method/Echo/Rapid Eye Movement all the way back.
Mm.
Actually, in fact, when I started raiding with this exact guild back in Rapid Eye Movement, it has been kind of the same guild since then, I was actually a Hunter main. Or like, I was a DP,
oh, wow,
DK DPS, but then I rerolled to Hunter for like multiple years, like 3 years or something. Also played like other stuff during progress, like Warlock.
I didn't know that. Okay. Progresses.
Yeah. Many people don't know that. And
that's great lore. Okay, keep going.
So yeah, DK is like, the thing is like, in what we have over the years developed kind of as the meta, let's say, for picking classes and stuff, was that it's, at least that's how I felt about it for a very long time, that it's always the better approach to have specialists on classes. Mm. And like, if you, like, you need to have some kind of flexibility in some slots So that's why you see some people reroll sometimes, but you don't want to have like someone reroll to a DPS warrior every time. You don't want to have someone reroll to a warlock every time. And for the longest of times, this was the same kind of with DK, because DK was always very useful. Either it was like damage OP or the utility of it was like super broken. I can remind everyone of like the times where DK had mass grip access to that, like Gofin's Grasp. And it has always like this niche utility and big DPS potential, that it was one of those classes you didn't want people to reroll, because it's not, I want to say it's not the easiest one to pick up, because like if you make a rogue main reroll to it, for example, oh, where's my sprint? I cannot shadow step. Like I don't have any mobility. Like it takes getting used to the playing a class like this compared to like others. So that's where that comes from. Like that's why I mainly like stuck around to this, because it was needed for so many races and was really good for so many races. But actually in the past expansion and a half, this actually like really stopped being a thing because of the class buffs, and DK doesn't have one. So
and I would
very restrictive.
I would definitely go into that question in a bit where we talk about your kind of race to world first experience. And before that, I kind of picked up on something interesting. You mentioned that you kind of used to play a DPS log, a hunter, and you know that's very different kind of range classes versus a DK, right? And let's say there are aspiring viewers of yours out there, and they've seen you play DK at the highest levels on your stream and whatnot, and they say, wait, I want to try and learn to play a DK. What's your kind of advice? Like DK as a class, you know, like you mentioned, it's not very mobile. What are some of the things that you would advise people who are trying to get really good at DK? Like, what are some of the things you've learned yourself?
I think the biggest part in that kind of regard is to not shy away from learning also the other specs. I see a lot of people that ask me, oh, I really want to get good at Unholy. I want to really get good at only Frost or whatever. But if you want to play DK, why not play all specs? And I also mean blood as well. Like for the longest of times before me actually joining the Race World First team, I was actually a blood DK main. And I was tearing up the rankings on Warcraft logs. But that actually has helped me so much, because if you are playing tank a lot and then you play DPS, like, you recognize like mobs changing aggro patterns, for example. Like if a tank dies and then the mobs like swap to the next highest threat, a lot of players, they just give up. They just, oh yeah, okay, I guess we wipe. But there's always a little time where the mobs, they have to take some time to refocus their threats. And then if you're quick enough on that, and you know that that is happening because you have played tank before, then quick chains of ice, quick blinding sleet, you run away, and you know you get the threat because you're doing so much damage, etc. So my biggest advice is to just play the whole class and just learn everything about it, because that's just going to give you so much experience and so much knowledge about it.
Right. Okay. That's really inspirational, because that's something that I think only someone who has played the class at the highest level can kind of, you know, share an insight to. So thanks for that. And you earlier mentioned that you've been tearing up the ranks previously as Blood DK, and we'll come back to that because I think it's a very nice kind of segue to the next section. But before that, you kind of also mentioned that you advise people learn, you know, all the different specs or three specs. And one of the biggest things that, you know, at least in the Mythic Plus community, they often say that, you know, playing a DPS DK in keys, it feels bad, right? Unholy, you're kind of playing around your cooldowns and you see it in the MDIs, but it's in coordinated groups, while Frost is not exactly, you know, anywhere close to the meta. What do you say though, as someone who has played DK for the longest time, like, is there something that needs to be done for DK DPS specs for them to be meta in Mythic Plus? That's a question that I often see in the comments. What do you think?
I think that the biggest problem, not just for DK, also for many, many specs for Mythic Plus, is first of all, balance. Like the balance in World of Warcraft is in my opinion, like, really bad. Like, the balance is just focused on heroic passes from the raid, it feels like, because every single change they make, it just feels like they want to make that one a little bit more balanced. But that's not the whole game, as you said, for many players. Excuse me. For many players, the game is also Mythic Plus, sometimes even exclusively Mythic Plus. And if you then have classes that increase magic damage by 5% of the whole group, and you can then build your comp around that magic damage buff, and then other classes don't have that, and then DK, for example, has, okay, the utility is drip and combat dress. Okay, everybody can have combat dress now, right?
Right.
But not everybody can have this 5% damage thing, or like real bloodlust.
Right.
Like, we used to have drums, which were 25%, now they're only 15. So I think the biggest problem for this whole Mythic Plus meta class problem is just the balance, which includes, but it's not limited to, the raid buffs. Like, raid buffs and important utility like combat dresses being made so available to everyone with engineering, but then others not. Like, it feels like some classes are more equal than others, if right. I can say that.
Yeah. I love it. You're already going to like the spicy part of this interview that I know is going to be great later on, which is a nice segue, because going back to what you earlier mentioned, you know, you said something like, before I started kind of doing, you know, the big Race to World First stuff, doing, you know, playing the best guilds and whatnot, you mentioned that you were tearing up the rankings as a Blood DK. Kind of talk us through like the process, your wild journey, right? Because obviously you started off as just a regular player like most of us. But how did you go from that to kind of being spotted and then joining a big, you know, kind of raid roster that's doing a Race to World First? Kind of talk us through your journey here.
Yeah, there's actually a lot of funny things happening along those journeys. So I'm glad to share all of
please,
that.
Please, don't spare any details, please.
So at first, I was raiding a lot with my real-life friends. And up to, I think, what was the last raid we did? I think it was Throne of Thunder 10-man.
Mm.
Like, you know, we raided pretty much since Vanilla together.
Wow.
But then at some point... on and off, obviously. But then at some point, life catches up to people. And then I also had a lot of breaks up to like MOP. But then late MOP, that's when people started to really like stop playing the game. But I wasn't really done. I didn't feel like I was done. And I wanted to do more. So I joined different 10-man guilds and on German servers back then, with German client even. And yeah, back then I was like, I don't know what the world rank was, like world rank 1000 or something. And I just wanted to play. And at some point I joined like a little bit of better guilds, like world rank 300 or something. And then there, I started to notice that I'm actually like kind of outperforming other people in my team. And then I was like, okay, I kind of want to climb. And then I was checking what's the best guild on my server. And back then it was a notorious German guild called TG Gaming.
Okay.
They don't exist anymore.
Why are they notorious? Tell us more about that lore.
I don't want to go into too much detail.
Okay, cool.
What?
That's all right.
But there was a lot of notorious people in that guild. But yeah. So I joined that guild and I got accepted.
Wait, so
but they didn't really have.
Hang on, you just waltz in, you just apply, and you're like, okay, you're the man. Like, you just waltz into the roster.
Nah, I already proved myself kind of in a like world 300 guild. Mm. Like, I joined like a world 300 10 man guild, and then
right.
they're always looking for recruits, and that was like the best guild on the server. It was like a world 30 guild or something at that point.
And at the era, you were playing a ranged DPS, or were you already a DK?
No, I was playing Blood DK.
Oh, wait, yeah.
I was playing Blood DK.
Right, okay, cool.
I was playing Blood DK, and they made me create a Warlock, actually. That's
okay.
That was where the Warlock came from, because they were like, yeah, we don't really want to replace our tank, but we know you play well from your logs, and can you make a Warlock? I was like, okay, sure.
Okay, I didn't know that you used to make a tank. Okay, that's interesting. So how was that transition like from a, you know, because obviously you're world top 300, and then suddenly you are asked to play a DPS in, you know, the top German guild. How did that feel?
It was a lot of things at once, because not only did I have to play a different role, But I also had to play 25 man instead of 10 man. And
sheesh, okay.
Back then, I didn't have a good PC. So my FPS dropped from like 60 FPS to like 15. It was pretty bad.
How the hell do you rate with 15 FPS, dude? I don't know how you do it.
I don't know. There's some people in Razzle First nowadays that rate with that kind of FPS.
Wait, so you were doing 15 FPS and you were still passing well?
No, I was not passing well on the Warlock.
Okay.
Here's the thing. I joined that guild teaching gaming, and on the second week that I was there, a certain expansion to Diablo 3 came out. It was called Reaper of Souls, if you remember.
Right.
And it was kind of like a guild mandated thing that like, oh yeah, we're going to take that week off because everybody wants to play that game.
Okay.
I was never really a Diablo player, and I was like, what the fuck? I want to play the game. I want to play WoW. What is happening? Okay. Mm. And then I was like, okay, well, let's see. And then here comes the funny part. Another guild noticed me because I also got to play my DK in that 10-man pack. I don't know, whatever. But okay. They noticed me, and they were from an English server from Terra Mill.
Okay.
And they were like, hey, we noticed you on Warcraft Clocks. Do you want to raid with us? And I was like, well, that fits pretty nicely. My guild is not raiding this week. I can't raid with you this week. So I raided with a guild called Prime on Terran Mill.
Right.
And yeah, I got to play my DK there, and I was super happy there. And I got like three rank ones and 25 or something. And that kind of messed up my relations with the TG Gaming Guild.
Right.
And then they got really angry. They came at me like, why are you raiding with another guild? Did you have a trial raid with them? And I was like, I don't know. I just wanted to play. And then yeah,
and you guys are playing Diablo. It's a fair, you know, fair world. You know.
Yeah, that's what I thought. But then they just kicked me.
Right.
And then I joined the other guild.
Right. So, okay. Okay. That's cool. Sorry. Before you move on from that story, you mentioned that, you know, Prime obviously heard about, you know, they reached out because of your Warcraft logs. Before you go on further, and I know there's more to your story, kind of tell us, what's kind of your secret to passing so well and getting such ranks on Warcraft logs? Like, what goes behind, you know, the kind of dedication that you need to get that kind of logs?
In general, it's just trying to understand how the game works and making use of all of that information. So back then, the secret to passing very well as a tank was making use of a mechanic called Vengeance. This was a thing back then in Mists of Pandaria. Mm. So it was, you get more, basically it boiled down to you get more attack power the more damage you take. Mm. And when you were solo tanking a lot of bosses, you had to take like, instead of swapping on two stacks, you had to like take all six of them or something. So, that was one thing. And then making use of that and knowing when in the fight your vengeance was highest, because it was not a constant value. Like you take more damage at some parts of the fight. And then knowing when that is was a really big part of that. There was like one thing on the boss coach Siegecrafter Black Fuse where I actually made the whole raid move on pull somewhere and made the Shaman at Lusted move even further, because back then Bloodlust had a range of 100 yards.
Okay.
So I wanted them to bloodlust and pull like normal, but I didn't want bloodlust and pull.
Oh, dude, you're genius. Okay.
And then I got my own personal bloodlust.
Just to
in
get
the fight
that pass is
had,
amazing.
And I had like 1 million extra attack power.
Okay.
Yeah.
I start to so see why it, you're respected. Okay.
It's a lot about knowing these mechanics and knowing and how to apply them. Also, what a lot of people don't know about tanks nowadays is like a thing I also researched back then, is a thing called parry haste. Mm. So when you parry a mob that melees you and you're currently on a melee swing, you have something called parry haste, which speeds up your own swing timer. Mm. And this is like part of why when you're using a two-hand weapon as a blood DK, your attack speed is still like super fast when you're tanking mobs. It's because you're getting hit so much and you have a lot of parry. And that's also why crit is pretty good stat, right? It's not just crit damage, it also gives you more parry, which also gives you more parry haste, especially if you're tanking multiple mobs at the same time. So there was another mechanic that interacted with it. Don't want to go into too much detail with it, but yeah, figuring that stuff out was like pretty integral to min-maxing the damage back then. Right. Yeah.
Okay, I do want to resume your story about, you know, your lore. But before that, I want to ask, stuff like parry haste, how the hell do you go about figuring out these very minute nuances that is not even detailed in any, like, you know, guides or anything? How do you go about figuring out these kind of things?
So in this specific example, I wanted to compare myself to something else, I don't know what it was, a different DK, or was it a different spec? I don't know what I wanted to do.
Right.
But, and then I noticed a discrepancy. I noticed why am I meleeing so fast? I have a swing speed of 1.4, but my two-hand weapon has an attack speed of 3.6. How is this possible? This cannot just be haste making it faster, right?
Right.
And that's then when I dug deeper, and for example, for parry haste, then I stumbled upon a wiki entry. The wiki is still pretty good. There's a lot of info there. Some of it sometimes is outdated, but a lot of it is still good. I then read up on it and figured it out. Oh, that's how it works. And then, confirmed my theory and made sure that it is the way I think it works.
Man, you guys are raised to Wolver's Raiders. You guys are built different. That's amazing. Okay, so let's resume your story. You got kicked by the German guild. And then what happened?
Yeah, I got kicked by the German guild. And from then, I joined Prime. And all the way back then, this is almost 10 years ago, I think, now. That's when I got to know Narcolis. He's my longest friend. I've played with this guy for 10 years now. So yeah, I'm going to play with him tomorrow as well.
Right, very cool.
So that's where I met him. And I met a lot of other friends that I met over the years, which don't play anymore. But that's that. And in that guild, I stayed until, I think, Warlords of Draenor in the middle of or something. And we even went for Race World first in the beginning of Warlords of Draenor, and we killed some bosses World Rank 10 or something.
Right.
I think Tektos Brackenspore, but the guild disbanded before last boss, so it's kind of sad.
Right. All right, before we talk about your next step after that, I want to ask you, so Race to World first back then, right? This was Warlords of Draenor, like you said. You know, there wasn't a big stream. There wasn't a lot of attention or viewership on Twitch. How was it like? What is the Race to World first back then like?
It was very secretive. So there was this hidden rule that basically all guilds adhere to, where it was you cannot release a kill video until 5 guilds have killed that boss.
Wait, are you serious? There's an unspoken rule?
Everybody kind of adhere to it. Only sometimes a rogue member, let's say, of a guild, this happened to us once actually, released it on their personal YouTube channel or whatever, and then they got a lot of flack for that actually. So it was a very well respected rule.
So honor amongst people, you got to figure out your own strats basically.
Exactly. You don't want to ruin it for people. You don't want to have people, be suddenly, oh, now they release a kill video and they raid one more day and they can overtake us or whatever.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so later on we'll talk about the Race to World first in the modern day, but let's continue your story. So they disbanded halfway and since then, I guess you and Narcolis just moved on to another guild. Is that what happened?
It's actually, we split up there. I actually did apply to Method back then, and I got a vouch from my friend Jimmy Fragments.
Right.
And because they had to replace a tank, and I actually joined Method there after Heimall in preparation for BlackRock Foundry. I didn't make it to BlackRock Foundry though, because they actually decided to not have me main tank because I was a new recruit. And I was pretty much only playing DK at the time, and they wanted someone to play also Monk and Paladin. And I didn't really have that in my repertoire, let's say,
right
at the time. So I was going to be backup, DPS, third tank maybe, and I was I'm not going to play a single boss. F that. And I was thinking very different back then than to what I do now, to how I do approach things nowadays. But then, I was back then on the Method forums, I threw a DM to Roger Brown saying, yeah, I don't really see myself getting much play here. And, you know, I was very arrogant looking back at this. And I was like, nah, I'm gone. And then I joined what Nakulis joined. He joined with Scribe into Rapid Eye Movement.
That's the beginnings. Okay, I kind of see your trajectory now. And that's basically how you stepped up to kind of raise in the world first. And we'll come back, by the way, to your comment about, you know, these days you see things differently. And we'll kind of talk about that maybe towards the end of the interview. But I would like to ask you, you've been in different guilds. You kind of play at the highest level. Every time you join a new guild, do you have that feeling of like nervousness when you're going for your trial? Or to you, it's very ordinary. You just play your game and you're so confident in your abilities that like you don't even think too much about your trial.
No, every single time. Like even now, like, I mean, as many people know, I left Echo like a couple of months ago and I joined Method as an analyst now. And I get to raid with them. And even then, when I have my first raid with them, with bosses that I have played before,
right,
I still equip Tank Trinket as a DPS to like not be ashamed to die again, whatever. Like, it never goes away.
Yo, that's good. Incredible to hear, because you've been so seasoned at this game and yet you still kind of, you know, take every trial so seriously. And I think that says a lot about the way you treat this game. And I think there's a lot of respect there. Very cool.
Yeah, definitely. Like, you always need to give 100% and take it seriously.
And you mentioned your analyst role, and we'll also come back to that later because I think it's a very interesting role. But let's kind of, you know, before we go there, let's talk about kind of being in the race to world first scene, right? For many years, having to kind of prepare for every race, all of us viewers, we sit at home and we watch the stream and it's like, okay, it's exciting times. It's great production. But kind of tell us the prep work it takes to be a race to world first raider. You know, I've seen you prep multiple alts and all these split runs and whatnot. Tell us the mentality it goes behind to preparing for a race to world first.
Yeah, the main mentality has always been pretty much, okay, guys, trust the process. It's all going to be worth it. that's like the main thing, yeah, people need to like understand, because like a lot of the things you do, they're like really, really not fun. Like, it's not just split rates. It's also like having to figure out what is good and what isn't compared to other specs, which is, in my opinion, really hard. And I think a lot of the times you cannot even like make a good enough judgment, and you just need to go with the flow and just be ready for things when the patch hits. So a lot of the guilds do something which they also spy on each other for this, or try to at least.
Right.
They just go to dummies, like either in Silver Moon or even in Siege of Orgrimmar, there's dummies there. And they just do dummy DPS tests with like the whole, like they just hit dummies and then see, okay, what is good, how the cooldowns align. And for the longest of times, this has been like dictating the meta kind of, but in my opinion, it has always like just been flawed and has not been giving us good enough data. And now with Power Infusion, Augmentation, Evoker, and the fights being so different from each other, it's very tough to take that data from those dummy tests and make a good prediction for anything. So it's like, yeah.
Okay.
There's a lot of time where you just hit dummies and you're just sitting there like, why am I even doing this?
That's fascinating. So we'll talk a bit about class balancing, or rather we'll talk a lot about class balancing. But before that, you mentioned that for the longest time, you know, you send people out to hit the dummies and whatnot. So I'm assuming you send the specialist in your roster, like, okay, you main DK, you go test all the frost and unholy specs and all the talents, and you report back to us kind of your dummy data. Is that how it's done?
I don't know. When it comes to the spec specifically, like, we don't really report that back to anyone because people don't really care about it. It's more about like, how is it shaking up versus other classes, you know?
Right.
Is there something notable? Is there some fight where your class specifically is like really, really good?
Right.
Or can be super good? What do you think about? Is it good on Firak? Blah, 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 all of that.
And let me pick your brains there, because when you are at the cutting edge of kind of raiding, and you know, all these guys, they might not even be ready, right? Patch day, something drops, there might be tuning to classes and specs. A lot of the things you probably need to figure out on your own, right? Let's say talent builds and whatnot. What's your approach? And obviously you, I think now that you're an analyst, you can probably kind of give us a bit of sense. Like, what's your process when it comes to figuring out something entirely new like that?
The way we approach fights in general is that at first we always make sure that we live the fights. And that's like the general base of it. Like, we want to make sure that we live and then damage comes after. When it comes to specs and builds, we always want to make sure that we get the maximum out of the classes. And that requires us to know how exactly does everything work and play together. Oh yeah, if you get this set bonus, how does this talent work with that, etc. So yeah, it's a bit tough to explain.
Right.
But a lot of it is just knowing how stuff works,
right,
and making sure that you can apply that to the
right. Okay, to the boss. That's helpful. And you spoke a bit about the preparation. Now let's switch gears and say, all right, the race has started, right? And you guys have done your split rates. We are into maybe the second half of the race now. We are, you know, kind of competing for ranks. And what's that mentality like? So you're done with the prep work, the stuff that nobody really enjoys, you know, doing multiple alts and stuff like that. But now you are in the thick of things. You're actually in the roster and you're competing for ranks. What's that feeling like? Because we sit at home in the living room or in our rooms and we just watch the stream and it's like you guys are raiding for, I don't know, 6, 8, 12 hours straight. Like, how is it like for your mental game to be raiding at a kind of, you know, length and durations? How is it like?
For me personally, I never really had an issue with like raiding for many hours at a time, because I'm a very like goal-oriented person.
Mm.
So for me, always the goal was there. Okay, we need to finish this boss, let's say, or whatever is at hand, even if it's splits. But that is a really tough thing. Like, splits is like a never-ending thing, and I actually, it's like one of the big reasons why I stopped raiding Resort right. first. Because like those splits are a fucking thing. But for me, it's always like looking forward. Okay, what are we doing? What are we doing this for? And what is the end goal? What do we want to achieve here? And we want to finish these bosses and defeat these bosses and get there first, figure out stuff and get it done.
Right.
That's like always what helped me personally and be like, okay, even when we are not winning, like I've lost many times as well. Like, it's not like I'm just sitting here from someone who's just always won. Easy for you to say, you always just won. That's not true. Like, I've also lost a lot, and it's tough. But if you always look forward to like, oh yeah, when this is our goal and we need to work forward to it, and
right,
and your whole process in your head, like, be adjusted to that. That's like important.
So, you know, obviously losing sucks, but tell us about the feeling of winning the race. Like, I mean, most of us will never fathom what is it like to have that feeling. What does it mean to you to win a race? Like, what goes through your mind?
I mean, you say that you will never have that feeling, but as someone who has, like, for example, won Race World First, but then before also finished races,
right?
It is very similar. For example, like, everybody has like that kind of guilt that they check on Raid.io or on World Progress. Oh yeah, I want to beat this guilt. I want to beat those. And I had those guilts back then as well. And it's a very similar feeling where it's like, if we win against these guys now, like, we have the bragging rights and whatever. You know, it's basically that, just, I guess, on a global scale now. So it's very similar, but a bit more exaggerated. Like, when it comes to the, like, production stream and stuff, like, you as a player, you don't really get to see much of that unless you're at the event and you get to, like, go to the interviews and whatever. But if you're just a player at home and you're playing, then, you can have the stream maybe on the side when it's over. But during the race, you're not actually watching any of that. And I feel like when you finish the race, if you won or you lost, it's very similar to, like, you know, losing or winning to your own rival guild on your server, let's say. It's just multiplied. That's a very similar feeling, I think.
Right. Okay. So let's get into the meat of, I think, our interview, because, you know, obviously earlier on you already mentioned a bit about the class balancing and the state of the game. And I really want to get your thoughts on this, because this has been the biggest criticism of, I guess, Race to World First and how the rosters are being built, right? Like earlier you mentioned about class buffs and, you know, certain utility that only exists with certain classes. So I would just like your take on this. Does Mythic raiding need to change? I don't know, like, is it the restriction of the 20 man, or is it like class utility and buffs need to relook at? If you had a magic wand and you're Blizzard and you're, you know, kind of changing stuff for the War Within, what are the changes you want to see?
I think something definitely should change. It's the problem with it is if, like, WoW is a very complicated game with all of these specs, like how many is it now, 36 specs or something. You have all of these different game modes. You have raiding, you have mythic raiding, which is like another thing entirely compared to like heroic and normal raiding. Then you have mythic plus, which is completely different. And I feel like some of the things that they create, they're made for only some parts of the game. For example, these raid buffs, like my theory on why they even introduced them in the first place is that they didn't like, for example, us running 12 warlocks on, what was that boss called? Ah, the two boss raid.
Right,
Unat.
Right.
Unat. Like they didn't like us playing 12 warlocks there. Because like if you then see clips of it on Twitch or whatever, then oh yeah, what is this? Does this game only have like four classes? I think that is like this is like maybe it's a little bit of a conspiracy theory, but I think the reason they made all of these class buffs is that they have like representation in quotes. I hate that word, but yeah. in mythic raiding of every class. And then you can say, yeah, everything is represented in the highest form of content, so nobody is excluded and whatever. I think this is a very bad way to do it.
Right.
If it even needs to be done. I don't even think in the highest difficulty of the game, you don't need to have like these strict rules of, you need to have every class in the raid. Like, I think that takes away from creativity and it makes people just be in the raid just because of aspects they cannot control, like what their class brings, not how they play. So that's like number one. I think class buffs, they just need to go completely. Right. Or we transition to a system that we already had where it's like much better, like Mists of Pandaria or even Wrath of the Lich King. You have like you have buffs, but let's say Warrior Shout, like the Battle Shout, it can be brought by three different specs, right, not just Warrior. Like back then it could be brought also by DK. Or I think Shaman could also bring it. I'm not sure. So that's definitely a thing that I would like, that they just remove this whole idea of the class buffs being so mandatory. Because, yeah, it's bad for raiding, but I think where it is really, really bad is Mythic Plus. Like Mythic Plus, these class buffs, they're just so restrictive.
Right.
Like if you have one, you have a pretty good chance to be wanted, let's say. Like, let's say a druid has a really good chance because Mark of the Wild is a unique thing, which is like making everyone tankier. It's making everyone have to about like 2.5 to 3% more DPS. I know a lot of people think, no, hey, isn't it just 3% DPS? No, it's not. 3% versus is not 3% DPS. Yeah, it's because it's if you add versatility. Like, if you increase your versatility by 3%, you're not increasing your damage by 3%.
Oh, what you're saying is multiplicative, basically.
It's just like, if you have a certain amount of versatility and you say you do 100 damage with that, and then you get 3% extra versatility, you don't do 103 damage. You do whatever. It's a bit hard to go. Like, you need to multiply it.
Yeah.
It's a bit hard to explain, but it's basically a little bit less than 3%, around right. 2.5 to 2.8, depending on how much versatility the player has. But yeah, the point is that it's very tough for someone to get into groups and be wanted and all of that if they don't have that thing which people really want, which is these class buffs. And I think that is just really, really harmful for the game. And I think it just has to go completely. Right. I don't, there's just no, I don't see a way around it. It just either has to go completely or be very distributed over a lot of classes. But I think they should just remove it.
Mm.
That's saying my number one thing. If right. I could change one thing.
And the other big change that I think a lot of people have been talking for the longest time is basically the NA versus EU start. And I know, you know, a lot have been said about this, but I also want to hear it from you. So yeah, what's your take? Why doesn't Blizzard just have a, I don't know, like a lot of people have been saying, why don't you just have a tournament realm? Or I don't know, like make sure like you release the raid start time at the same time. Like, what's your take on this? Like, it sounds easy, but why are they so stubborn on this?
I think it's just that they don't want to spend the work on it.
Mm.
I think that's the most likely explanation.
Right.
Logically, I don't think it really makes sense. I think it would make the whole Race the World First competition event more attractive if you would have everyone start at the same time. Because like as a EU player, not necessarily a Race the World First player, just as an EU player, like an onlooker towards the Race the World First, for example, isn't it also more interesting if you can see your favorite guilds start at the same time? Like, I always thought it was really weird that, oh yeah, the NA people, they get to go first, and then my favorite girls, they can come later. Oh, can they catch up? It's always just really weird. And the main problem is that it's all, like you said, on live servers. But personally, from having played in them in it, I don't think it would be just as, let's say, prestigious or as fun if it wasn't on live server, if it was on...
Tournament realms.
Tournament.
Yeah. Okay. That's so, a good point.
I think it's just a problem of them not wanting to change the whole lockout, reset timings, everything. But I think, honestly, it's a solvable problem. And this whole argument of, yeah, no, they're catering to the 0.1% again, blah, 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 blah. Frankly, I don't give a fuck. Like they should,
right?
like if you look at other companies, they make their competitions also just purely for those.
Yeah.
Like why does, for example, LEC exist? Why do you know all of these things exist? And they have like these ladders where people can qualify in other games.
Yeah, 100%.
I don't know.
I mean, the viewership speaks for itself. So I think what you're saying there definitely, you know, I don't think a reasonable person would dispute that. So. Yeah, hopefully Blizzard kind of looks at that. Okay, so kind of let's switch gears here because you mentioned that, you know, now that you are in an analyst role, right?
Yes.
How tell us, like, how does that differ versus being, you know, a typical raider, right? Like, kind of tell us what does your job entail? And I assume just from the name itself, there's a lot of brainy stuff that you do. Like, but tell us what do you do?
Yeah, I mean, I have not... been a straight up analyst yet up to now, but I feel like I've in the past done a lot of the stuff that I will be doing also in the future now, especially in previous tiers when I wasn't playing on certain bosses. For example, a recent example of that would be the Jailer,
right,
where I was analyzing movement patterns that we did. For example, like I noticed, okay, we're moving the boss here, then we have some void zones here, and then the whole melee camp is just going there and losing like 5 seconds of uptime. And I was like, okay, guys, if you go here, bait there, and then move here, you have full uptime. Can you try it one pull? And then they did try it, and then it worked. We got uptime on literally everyone. And then I went on to the next thing, and I was looking at someone re-rolling to a new healer spec. I didn't really know the spec, but then he asked me, can you look over my globals and see where I can improve some stuff? And I help them improve. Yeah, you can use your cooldowns here. So it's a lot about cooldown timings, when to use your stuff, movement, all of that stuff.
Dude, that's looking super big brain. That's super big brain. Like, okay, so there's two things that you mentioned. So let's first talk about that melee uptime thing, right? Like maximizing melee uptime. How do you go about figuring shit out like that? Because I assume you look at a VOD, but then how do you go from there and say, wait, hang on, if we bait here, we get more uptime. Like how does that mind work?
I basically put myself into the position of, I want to do damage. Where can I stand to do damage here in that specific example? And from playing at the exact, from just playing and then, you're always playing a bit more cautiously and you're not trying things out when you're actually on the boss. But when you're looking at a recording, you can identify, oh, wait, why are we standing here? We can stand over there and there's nothing going on over there and we have range to the boss. So it might look a bit weird. We're all the way away from the range people, but it works,
right,
in theory. And then you go try it, I guess.
Okay, that's super cool. All right, the second thing you mentioned is someone says, I play a new healer spec. Please look over my GCDs. Tell me where to improve. Now, my biggest question to you is, you don't even main a healer. And sorry, this might sound weird, but you don't main a healer. So how do you go about figuring shit out like that?
Yeah, that was my question when I was there as well. And I was like, how am I going to do this? Okay. And then I literally pulled up a Wowhead, Wowhead article. I was like, okay. And then I mean, that's the first thing. And then I asked someone else, what are the important spells? And I kind of compared it to a DPS rotation. Okay. What is the important spell that he wants to press? And what are the fillers? Because the rotations, compared to DPS, they're very similar for healers. They also have the builder, spender schemes and whatever. So it's it's not a completely different thing. I don't need to know intricacies of procs and everything. I just I just needed to know how many globals they did that were actually good and how many were you just cast an instance because you wanted to move.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And now I want to go back to what you mentioned earlier about, you're a very different kind of person in this kind of World of Warcraft scene these days versus, I think your earlier statement, you said something back then, you thought very differently, even to the extent maybe it's a bit kind of arrogant when you were younger. But let's kind of dive deeper into that. So why would you say that you have kind of evolved as a person? How is your mentality towards this game different these days?
It's basically realizing what is important. That's the number one thing. Because a lot of the times when people progress in lower rank guilds, they don't necessarily realize what is holding them back when fighting bosses and when wiping on bosses. And a lot of the times people focus on the wrong things, DPS especially, not DPS players, but how can we improve our DPS? When a lot of the times in Race to World First progress, DPS is the last thing that you think about.
Wow, that's interesting. Okay. And what do you think are some of the things that people overlook? And they tend to gravitate towards DPS, but what are some of the things that people overlook?
A lot of it is personal usage. So personals as in defensive personals. It's a very big thing, especially early in progression when the gear is not that good. I don't know.
Right. No, that's cool.
That's the number one thing. And a lot of it is also... Yeah, movement. Movement is a very big thing. Positioning during fights. Many people just want to emulate globals.
Right.
But oftentimes globals and how to press damage, it should be, as I said, the last thing you think about. Because a lot of these fights, for example, think about a fight like Firak phase one.
Right.
If it's a phase transition, 70%, you need damage to push it. But... oftentimes it's a timed transition and then it doesn't matter what percentage you push the boss to, right? And it's if the boss phases with 80% or 85%, it doesn't really matter. We just want to play the strategy and make sure that we get through the phase with 20 people alive, right?
Right. That makes sense. Let's switch gears here and talk a bit about something closer to heart now, because obviously we have some of the more questions related to MDT that I would love to ask you. But before we go there, something closer to heart, which is kind of WeAuras. A lot of people have kind of been talking about, hey, private WeAuras, does it work or not? Do we need WeAuras in this game for Race to Worlds? Is it ruining Race to Worlds? Tell us, as someone who has been through so many races, what's your take on this whole WeAuras and private WeAuras kind of debate?
I would love if the game would change and you wouldn't need so many WeAuras for so many things. Like, I always bring up this example from back in the day. I think you've also played Final Fantasy, right?
Yep.
And in, if you compare the mechanics that require coordination in that game compared to WoW, it's like such a big difference. If you have a timer on a debuff in Final Fantasy, that's literally a clock painted on the floor and you can read it. How is it not possible for the WoW dev team to do that in WoW? I don't understand it. Ever since, like, this goes back all the way to Warlords of Draenor. We had the fight Archimonde, the mythic only phase, and the boss would dish out four different debuffs, which all had different durations. One had 4 seconds, the next one had six, the next one had eight, and the other one had 10, I think. It was like that. And so they were staggered, exploding at different times, and you needed to soak them. So you had to split it into four different teams, and you needed to adjust. And yeah, the optimal way of handling that was just have a WeAura assign every single one of the 20 players to one of the four camps to have everything evenly divided into five groups, which all soak one debuff.
Okay.
So how is that not a thing where, like, it was impossible to see without a WeAura who has which? Like, they all just had like a fuzzy green ball above their head. But like, even just like, you have this nowadays, this bomb clock timer above people's heads.
Yeah.
Like, if you know it from Halundros.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't even give us that back then. And from that experience back then, they should have said, oh yeah, we need something better for people to coordinate this. Because like, I rode a WeAura back then, because this was back then in the days where, like I said, there was no kill videos, there was no streams, there was no WeAuras released for people. So we were back then the world 6 guild.
Right.
Like sixth, and yeah, we didn't have any WeAuras, and I was like, I was completely new at WeAuras kinda, and they were like, yeah, we need a WeAura signing people, and before that even, yeah, we need a WeAura that shows us the radar of all of the people where everyone is with the lines, and I was like, oh
dude, okay. That sounds insane. Like, so does that mean that the top guilds back then, like, you know, they all had some WeAuras master kind of programming shit for themselves?
That's kind of where it started. Back then, it was Potem for Method back then doing it. Actually, I met him once. But that's when it kind of started, and when it started to become crazy.
Right.
And I think that's like the number one thing for me, is that Blizzard just didn't react to all of that back then. They reacted to the most egregious things. For example, like I mentioned, the radar on Archimonde. After that tier, after that expansion, I think, they restricted it, that you cannot have unit positions anymore in raids. So raiders were not possible anymore. I mean, I think they did it after the first raid of the next expansion. Because they had some more complicated bosses coming up in the Nighthold, and they didn't want people to use raiders for it. Because after the raider tech was like out in the open and I learned more about it, kind of like the genie was out of the bottle,
right?
Let's say like that. And I even figured out back then that we could estimate enemy positions even. So I had like a whole proof of concept where not only I was tracking players on the radar, but I could also track bosses and enemies on the radar, which then would make bosses like, let's say, Varimatras, where you had like lines shooting from bosses to players. You could all track that with a WeAura and instruct players where to go in relation not only to players but also to bosses.
Sheesh, and that's insane.
Thankfully, then at some point they announced, yeah, we will be shutting this down after the first raid, and I could drop that whole project, because that was, I mean, I learned a lot from it, but this was a really, really tough thing.
That's very cool. And go on.
I just wanted to answer to the private
Yeah.
WeAura thing, but yeah. So now they're trying this whole private aura thing to like force this coordination to us. I think this all stems from someone at Blizzard playing some raids in Final Fantasy, and they're liking the
right.
the whole instant communication. Yeah, I go and do the thing. I do this and whatever. And I think that's how they envisioned Smolderon to go. I don't think when designing Smolderon, they envisioned people to say, oh, yeah, press your macros, and then someone just reads the list out or whatever. You know, I don't think that was the idea.
Right. But that also speaks a lot about this community to figure out ways to work around Blizzard's limitations. But okay, interesting story. Okay.
Yeah, I just think this whole private aura thing, just to go a bit deeper on it, I think it's the wrong approach. And if they really wanted to take this approach and really push it all the way, they should have went way more ham, which would have destroyed the game for a lot of people.
Right.
Like
right.
if they really wanted to restrict a lot of stuff, which makes stuff automatable, like the macros and the communication between players, then they would need to, first of all, shut down inter add-on communication between like different players,
right.
let's say, doing raid and combat, doing raid and then combat. You would need to restrict reading chat, reading combat log between different players from add-ons. Basically, it would boil down to, yeah, you cannot have any really functional, let's say, combat add-ons
right.
in the raid anymore. And that, I think, would
that
be
will upset a lot of people as well. Yeah.
Yes. I don't want to say if it would be a good or a bad thing, because right. like as you can see with Plunderstorm, no add-ons can be a
true.
Good thing sometimes. But the issue I have with it is that the way people play WoW and the way people have played WoW for a long time, it's been pretty steady for like many years now. So if you set that, if you shake that up and make people suddenly have a whole different thing in front of them, and they need to like wholly adjust to this whole new thing, then that's just going to make a lot of people not want to play this game anymore.
Right, fair enough.
So I think private aura is a completely failed concept, and they should just abandon it completely.
Fair enough. Okay, so I would love to kind of dive into, you know, the whole, people know that other than you being a Race Warfare player in the past, they also know you as a great developer. And before we move on to kind of that topic, if I were to ask you to pick like your fondest memory in World of Warcraft, like you've played this game forever, like what would you say is like your best memory of this game?
Would have to be one of the race world first wins, to be honest.
Any specific one?
Like, yeah, I have a couple in mind. I mean, I will never forget the first one, which was I was playing Marksmanship Hunter, and it was the free boss raid, and we were killing Helya.
Right.
In
Legion.
In the second raid of Legion, yeah, that was it. And everybody thought like, it's just three bosses going to be fall over in one day or something, because the previous raid.
Yeah,
yeah, the previous raid, it was Emerald Nightmare, if you remember. That boss died it died in 16 hours. Like the last boss had 6 pulls or something.
Right.
It was a complete pushover. Nobody expected it. So now everybody in that next raid expected Helya to be the same or even easier. But then the first two bosses kind of were like, they're easy. But then Helya was actually tough. And a lot of guilds actually got banned doing that. That was a whole nother story.
Right.
Like they tried to do some shady shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was some shady stuff going on. But we were not exploding. And we actually won. And this was a little bit of a surprise for us. But yeah. I don't know. I was kind of like myself personally working towards, we need a couple of raids to like get that world first win, you know, because we were competing. It was a three-way race at the time. It was Exodus, the Russian guild.
Right.
Rest in peace. And then there was Serenity.
Wow. Like
most of the people that were previously in Method were now in Serenity. And then I think it was Just Wait, Perfecto, Roger Brown, and Sko.
Right.
They joined up with us, with Rapid Eye Movement.
Right.
And made basically Method 2.0. And us then winning that race was, it felt really, really good because there was a lot of rivalry between especially Serenity and Method at the time.
Right.
And, yeah, I don't know.
Dude, that's amazing.
I was always looking up to those people, and then beating them finally after all of these years was a very cool feeling. But I think the best win ever for me personally was, it just has to be Sylvanas.
Right. Amazing. I can only imagine those feelings. And you brought out a lot of nostalgic feelings, just I guess from the old guilds that you mentioned, because I think a lot of us have been playing this game for so long and we've definitely heard of those names. And it just reminds us like this game has so much history. And kind of speaking to history, and I know, you know, I don't want to go beyond the time that I booked with you. So let me dive into the next part. And this has also got to do with WoW's history, right? And you have been a very important part of WoW's history, really, because of that add-on that you maintained and you created, which is MDT add-on, right? And I just wanted to ask, what even made you want to create an add-on? Because it sounds like a lot of work. Tell us, like, what's the reason why you created the MDT add-on?
Okay, so the reason I created this, because it's the same reason I create anything, pretty much. It's because I'm a lazy person, you know? And this is actually a good trait to have as a programmer, believe it or not.
Okay.
Because the lazy programmers, they will try to find a way to, like, not do something, to not have to do work. And back then, when you did M+, it was always like a thing where it's like, at the end of the M+, do we have enough count? Let's check my count. We have 98%. We need to go back to the start of the dungeon and finish up the count. And then at some point, people got annoyed by that. And then they were like, okay, guys, let's go to M0. And then basically, we're going to dry run this whole key. We're just going to plan the route in the game in M0. And then at some point, I was like, there has to be a better way. This is horrible. And then, I had this idea that I should just have a map where you can select stuff. And then I was kind of like inspired a little bit by, let's say a board. I don't know how do you call this. Like when your coach, when you play football, is putting stuff like on the board with like the magnets.
Right. Yeah. Yep.
And then moving stuff around. I was kind of like, yeah, we should have that, but with the mobs, and you can select which mobs to play and whatever. And that was like the whole idea. And then I started concepts of it. And then, this actually works. And then I had to learn how to make add-ons, because I only made custom recurves, which is like, basically, if you know Lego, like you have like the big blocks, mm-hmm. and then you have the small intricate blocks, and I was only playing with the big ones, you know, easy, the noob ones.
I love that analogy. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So
I had to learn a lot of stuff.
Okay, so that's a great segue, because I think a lot of people would kind of ask you. I think I've seen your stream. A lot of people actually ask you, like, hey, so how do I get into developing add-on? So obviously you are a programmer by training. Kind of tell us, like, if someone wanted to get into learning how to make an add-on, the smaller Lego blocks, like you said, where do they even start? Mm-hmm. How do they even start this programming language? This, I think it's LUA, or maybe I'm pronouncing it wrongly. How do you even go about learning that shit?
Yeah, it's so I would also say start with the big blocks. Yeah, start with custom recurves and stuff. Nowadays it's like, like back in the day, a lot of the stuff that WeakRS has nowadays didn't exist back then. For example, if you want to have a name of, let's say you have a WeakRS that tracks somebody's debuff and you want to see their name in their class color. Mm. Back then you had to have like a custom Lua script for that. Mm. Nowadays you just select it in a display, right? And all of that, back then, WeakRS didn't have all of these things, so it was more necessary to do all of these things custom. Mm. So a lot of snippets were going around. Yeah, you get class color here. Yeah, you get formatted numbers, for example. That was a big one. So if you want to have like 1.2 million displayed as 1.2M, but instead of like the whole number written out, that was a custom script. So all of those things kind of were needed, but they also helped me like develop my skills, kinda. So nowadays, you don't really need those things anymore, but and only very rarely you actually need custom stuff for Vigorous. And then on top of that, those things, they need to be very complicated. Let's say custom trigger logic, watch triggers, the trigger state update, all of these things. Like when you actually need custom code, it tends to be very complicated nowadays. So maybe start with something small. Like, let's say there is like wizards online that can, yeah, I just want to turn this script into an add-on. How do I even start with it? Or look at other add-ons that how they do stuff. Like, for example, how do you structure it? What is a TOC file? How do you embed the libraries? All of these things. And what helped me a lot was looking at projects that did it before me and that do it in a good way. For example, Vigorous or BigWix. Those are very well maintained, bigger projects. Like, I wouldn't advise anyone to look at MDT. Because, like, a lot of that code is like from a long time ago. And nowadays I look at it, I would definitely not have made it like that and all of that. Like, some of the newer stuff is pretty cool. Like, right. Now,
yeah, I guess to rewrite all those, it's a painful process. So yeah, just
yeah, I'm not doing that.
Fair enough. You know, dude, Blizzard should just hire you and make that shit default in the game. I'm serious.
That's fine. I don't want to work for Blizzard. Okay.
Okay. No, that's very inspiring. You know, this whole development stuff, because, you know, I think a lot of us, we just download the add-on. We don't even think about, yo, who made this thing and how much effort it takes to make this thing. So I just want to say thank you at this point in time. Like, you know, before we move on to other topics, I think a lot of people wanted me to just thank you. They know that, you know, I was going to talk to you. And I just want to say, a lot of us, we use your add-on day in, day out, you know, and we don't think about the amount of work that goes behind, you know, this add-on. I just want to say thank you, and this on behalf of like the entire Mythic Plus community. So yeah, thank you. You have saved many keys from being bricked, and you are the real MVP for all our scores. So yeah
no problem.
Okay, cool. So let's kind of transit. And I want to pick your brains on what you mentioned earlier regarding Plunderstorm, right? And you said that, well, it's kind of showed us that without add-ons and all these fancy UI stuff, like, you could still have fun. But Plunderstorm has also been a very polarizing topic in this community. And you know, as a streamer yourself, I'm sure like you've seen comments flying around like that. What's your take? What's your take on Plunderstorm and what Blizzard is trying out with the mode?
I think a lot of the friction comes from there being this progression system tied to it. So like the mounts, the 40 renown, etc. And people kind of feel forced to do it because there's a lot of people in this game that just like to collect mounts and transmog and toys and all of that, like the collectors. So them being forced to have to do battle royales, which is like very, I call it like hostile PvP. Like very, like it's not like Battlegrounds where it's like, oh yeah, it's just a little bit of PvP. I think Battle Royale is like a step above that in terms of, let's say, the interpersonal like hostilities, let's say. I don't know, yeah. Hard to say.
Yep,
but it can be very frustrating to be on the losing end of this if somebody is dancing on top of your pops.
Yep.
And just has like the better abilities and has more experience and stuff. So if people just want to grind their mounts and stuff, then I totally get that frustration that they have to play some game mode that they don't necessarily like. I personally love stomping people.
You're one of those people. Okay.
I'm sorry. I'm on the other side of it, but I love Plunderstorm. I've never really played Battle Royales. I've played some H1Z1 and some PUBG back in the days, but never really like got too much into it. Right now in Plunderstorm, I'm working on my 1 million achievement. I'm like halfway done. So that thing is really, really fun. It I think Blizzard is, it's a very bold thing to do. And I think this whole thing of them having this progression system attached to it, it shouldn't have been that long in the beginning. I think that's like where the main problem arose from, where Plunder was very hard to come by. And like reaching the 40 in the very beginning took a long time. And maybe it's even taking too long now just for a casual player. So maybe they could reduce that. That's like, I think, the main problem with it, that this whole progression system is attached to it. But at the same time, it does make people play it. But if I see people, you know, I see it a lot of my games, and the guy is just killing some rare and he's like four levels below me. And okay. When I start attacking, he sees me and he just stops moving his character because he knows it's over. Then I know what he's after. Right. He's not about winning or actually playing the game.
For he just wants renown. You know?
He just wants to have his mounts. And like, who can blame them?
Yeah, right? Fair.
Like, it's just another way to play World of Warcraft, and I think it's a totally fair thing to do. Like, if you just want to play for mounts and collect cool stuff, then yeah, more power to you. That's it. But them having to be forced into Plunderstorm, it's a bit problematic. But I personally really like the game mode.
Right.
And yeah.
Very cool. Okay. Great take on a new system and new attempt by Blizzard. And speaking about new attempts, I think The War Within, a lot of people have been talking about this too. Hero talents. And maybe some people say that, oh man, it brings back memories from Shadowlands about Covenants. But what's your take? Is hero talents the right track? Anything you worry about? What do you think about them?
I feel like they remind me not so much about Shadowlands, but more about artifact traits from Legion. But they don't work the same way. I'm a little bit sad about that, because the artifacts in Legion, it was like a secondary progression system after hitting max level. As far as I understand, the hero talents now in the War Within, they, as soon as you hit max level, you have all of it, I think.
Correct.
Like, you just have all the points, and I think that's a little bit boring, because part of the allure of the artifact system in Legion was that, oh yeah, I need to level more to like get more stuff, right? It was like a secondary progression system. Yes, there was problems with it. It wasn't account-wide. It wasn't even spec-wide. It was like you had to like choose a character, and then you had to, within that character, also choose a weapon to level up back in the day. But I think a lot of it was cool, like that you had to like level it up after leveling up your character. But now you will just have that, and it's just, some of those talents are pretty like basic. Like, oh yeah, you have like 4% more crit with visibility or something. Excuse me. But yeah,
that's not very creative, but okay.
Yeah, some of the things are pretty cool. I think I've noticed that the some of these things, they are just a more elaborate 2 and 4 set bonus. That's how I kind of view them. Especially if you look at stuff like the Demonologist Warlock, I think, like that feels very similar to the current tier set, just with more intricacy. So I kind of like it that it's like a little bit of a mini game within the spec to min max. It's, if that's the idea, not every spec is getting that treatment though. If you look at some of the Shaman and Hunter trees, I mean, okay, that those need at least a second, third or fourth draft. Right. Like, those are really, really bad.
Right.
So yeah, I think the idea is kind of cool, but I wish they would just do more of a progression thing with it.
That's insightful. I want to kind of pick up on something that you mentioned. You know, you compared it to like Legion artifacts, and it, you know, this is also a debate, well, not really a debate, but it's a discussion that people have been having, right? Like, Dragonflight has done away with kind of like the need to do world quests, and you know, back in Legion we had to work for our artifact power, right? So some people are saying that maybe we should have some of that back. And yeah, I don't know what's your take on this, because obviously you've done the race to world first stuff and you have multiple alts you need to maintain. Did you ever enjoy doing that grind, or is that something that you think is just a necessary thing and you don't mind doing it? Like, what's your take on that?
I mean, if I enjoyed it, I mean, the some things come to mind, like, for example, the island grind.
Yeah, the island grind, yeah.
It was a pretty much self-inflicted thing that we set our goal and then at the end we didn't really gain much power from it, but it was mainly about the bragging rights before progress. Yeah, we have one more than you. But I don't know. I mean, I enjoyed it at some point, but mainly because like we did it as a team and like we reached a goal, not the whole process. Like islands became very repetitive. We did so much of it. It was actually crazy how much we did. Yeah, I don't know. Making your character stronger though in general is, in my opinion, a good thing with these systems. I know a lot of people disagree with this. There's like, oh yeah, it's a mandatory thing, but if you view it as a non-race world first raider, it can only be good because it's basically like, yeah, you get to nerf the bosses that you're fighting every week yourself by making yourself stronger, not just through gear, because at some point you have the gear and with the upgrade system, it's a bit easier than before to reach close to, like, let's say, optimum gear levels. So I think having a thing that you can level up every week to a certain amount is a good thing. I always look back at the cloak from Battle for Azeroth, which is, I think, one of the good things that expansion brought. Didn't bring many good things, but that was one of the good things, where every week you had something to look forward for. Oh yeah, I get more corruption resistance, so I can equip more corruption gear. It made your gear decisions a bit different over time because you get more of this stuff. Oh, now I have this and I can swap in this other piece. And it created some depth that wasn't there before and it isn't there now. And I kind of like that, like a gradual progression system. But the main problem I had with it in the past is that it was not hard capped. It was kind of soft capped. And then if there's a soft cap,
yeah, you have people that means who go crazy and farm.
Exactly. And for people like us, that means there's no cap. So like, okay, your islands, it's kind of soft capped. Yeah, it's not. It's not capped. We just do the multiplier. We just multiply it and put our time into it instead. So to solve that issue, I think they should handle it like they did the crests, where you just hard cap it. I don't know, at some point... between now and, I don't know, back in MOP or something, at some point they went away from hard caps and they put soft caps into the game. And I think that was a very bad decision. And I think they realize now that soft caps are not good. Hard caps are good. And with the quest, they did it. So I think if they want to do a meaningful secondary character progression system, like, let's say, the cloak, or we had the neck as well, which was honestly one of the worst implementations of it because it was so boring. Then I think they can do it, but they just need to be very careful at how to cap it.
Got it. Well, I think this is also a very nice time to kind of round up a little, because I know that you're a busy guy. So one very and by the way, for people who don't have context, I've seen Noggy kind of work on like Photoshop stuff on the stream, improving the MDD add-on. So, you know, I also don't want to hold the community back for enjoying the improvements. But dude, jokes aside, you know, obviously I think this entire conversation with you have kind of also reminded me about, you know, your transition as a player, right? Like, because you told me at the start, you're a DPS player, you played tank, and then you started doing the Race to World First stuff. Now you're an analyst. And, you know, a lot of people say that Dragonflight is kind of like, you know, it's a reset expansion. But what does it mean for you as an individual, right? Going into the War Within, what are some of the big things that we can, you know, that you look forward to as a player or as a person in the World of Warcraft community? Like, what are some of the things that you look forward to in the next 1 year?
So there's some stuff that I'm working on in secret, let's say.
Oh, very cool. Okay. Okay.
Some new stuff that's coming out probably, I don't know when exactly, but probably like with the beginning of War Within, some new stuff. I mean, some of the stuff is probably interesting to a lot of people, but, yeah, some cool stuff. I can't really share much about
No worries.
I'm working on stuff in the background with some awesome people. I'm currently in the process of updating MDT for season 4. Thankfully, a lot of the work has already been done by me in the past because it's the same dungeons. But I'm also updating those maps to the new format that I introduced in season 3, where all of the floors are in the same kind of...
Yeah, I love that, dude. Like, I just love that split map view thing. It's amazing. I saw it in your Discord. It was like, yeah, that's good stuff.
Yeah, it's... I think it's a very needed change, and all of those maps will be updated. And for War Within, I'm looking forward to adding those new dungeons as well. Obviously, I have some also more updates planned for MDT that, if I have enough time, I will put them in. For me as a player, it will be my first Race World First as a strictly. I don't know about that, actually. I might still find my way into the raid. You never know.
Yeah, true. I mean, like, somehow with your experience, they don't grow on trees, you know? So
yeah, we also said that, like, okay, well, if we really need to, like, nothing speaks against you. You just jump in for this last boss, and it's the, you know? Because in the past, I've always, like, never shied away from when we had some out of left field strategies. For example, I remember on Mr. Sazin, we four tanked that boss and we broke that boss completely, and they had to like change the whole boss because of the strategy that I came up with. So we had the four tanks and the two extra tanks would just handle the poison mechanic completely, and we could drop a healer and had way more DPS that way and everything. It was just completely breaking that whole boss, and then they had to buff the boss and make it harder for everyone after. Sorry about that, but something like that, I'm always up for doing stupid stuff like that, where we just break bosses with extra tanks. And I've done it many times, actually, where I played for a tank.
Dude,
nowadays, not so often anymore. But yeah.
For the next Race to World First, we will definitely want, we must do a panel of you and other, like, you know, raiders and potentially analysts and folks. Like, I think it'll be a fun one to kind of like look at strategy and stuff like. Because it sounds like you've done quite a bit of crazy theory crafting in your days. So I think that'll be a fun segment.
Always happy to.
Just and that's also a nice way to kind of round up, given like your future plans and whatnot. Any last kind of shout outs you'd like to give to your community and whatnot? I'll give you the microphone here. Like, is there any last words here?
Yeah, shout outs to my community, like you said. I know I've not been streaming much lately, but they know me. They know I will be back at some point. Shout out to them. Shout out to all the people helping me with MDT, especially Stinf, who always is there when I need some help with the Python stuff and everything. And shout out to my friends and shout out to my new guild, Mephit, who have been very supportive. And we're working on some awesome stuff. And hope we can do well in the next expansion.
Very cool. So with that, Noggy, just know that, you know, for anyone who's viewing this VOD or this podcast in the future, all the links to, you know, Noggy's socials will be in the comments, will be in the description. So, you know, definitely, I think, well, I don't think you need an introduction. Everyone knows you, but just in case there's someone new to this game and they hear of you for the first time, you know, they know where to follow you. But with that, Noggy, I also like to just kind of say also a final thank you. Not only for your time on this podcast, but also again for the MDT add-on. I think it's a very simple thing. Everyone uses it. We don't think about where it comes from and the amount of work it goes into managing this thing. And, you know, just a big thank you. You have, again, saved a lot of brick keys. Want to just thank you for that. Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure just talking to you. And you are super chill, dude. Like, I've realized that... I think out of a lot of the top players I played with, you have this very chill vibe, and I can see why people like to hang out in your stream because of that. Thanks for being a great guy. Thanks for coming on the show. And I'm sure this is not the last time, you know, we'll have you on the show. So till then, you know, please take care of yourself. Sounds like you're working on some exciting things. And yeah, thank you so much for keeping the MDT add-on updated for us.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Great. Thanks, Noggy. Have a great weekend and I'll see you soon. A great week, sorry. Losing track of time here. See you soon, Noggy. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. See ya. And that's a wrap for the episode of Noggy. I hope you enjoyed it. And if you did, make sure to check out our Patreon channel for the unedited ads-free version of this podcast that's available to all our Patreon subscribers. And speaking about our Patreons, A big thank you to all our Patreon subscribers that you see on screen. You folks are the real MVP. You make this podcast possible. And if you'd like to support this channel, the link to our Patreon is in the description below. Make sure to hit the subscribe button for more great episodes like this. And speaking about great episodes, the video in the middle of the screen will be of interest to you as well. I will see you in the next video.